Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 396, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Chuck Jackals from newtoupc.com. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Thank you. You grabbed me again.
Good to have you. We appreciate you coming out and taking the time to share with us. So last time we kind of talked about some of the things that you were changing in your business practices and stuff like that. What types of stuff are you doing now since the last time we talked to you?
Just have expanded more. Just finishing up having an intern for the summer. His last day will, I believe, be tomorrow. The state every summer usually gives me one or two interns. The state pays for them to learn computer repair.
Nice.
At least enough, at least a little something about computers.
Right.
And so it's, I usually task them with, disassembling the years worth of laptops that have accumulated in my shop from people, leaving them behind, not worth fixing, whatever the case may be.
Now, so with that being said, do you normally, I've always wondered this too, because I've got a bunch of, laptops and computers and stuff sitting downstairs. Do you normally part those out in your business and just kind of keep the parts in bins or something? Or do you tend to keep them together and just kind of, use them as needed?
I'll stockpile them whole for about a year until the interns come in the summer.
Okay.
And then I let them take them apart. That way it gives them experience
right
with disassembling laptops, have them separate them all out by components and log them into my spreadsheet there, and then get them all organized into the boxes. And anything in the interim that I need, I just take and go and start disassembling laptops and say, oh, is this got the right part? Does this work?
Right. Well, that's good. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it does give them experience for taking apart laptops, because there's still a lot of technicians out there that will not take apart a laptop. So it's, in my opinion, it's something good for technicians to learn.
Definitely, and that's why I tell my interns. I tell them, by the time you get done here, you'll have more experience tearing apart laptops than I know other technicians who have their own shops, because there's some that just they're afraid to take the risk and tear it apart a laptop, thinking that it's some kind of mystery hidden behind the plastic.
And right.
It's a lot harder to work on than say a desktop, but I don't know how the guys that aren't doing laptops are staying in business, because frankly, I think I see four desktops a year. I mean, a month.
Maybe okay.
Four a month, if that.
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot of them in my shop. It's mostly laptops, and so when you're trying to fix those, I had one today that I replaced the processor. In the 15 years I've been doing this, I've never had a processor personally go bad. I've actually never seen a processor that has went bad. This one, in fact, actually was bad for whatever reason. And I replaced it, no problem. But, sometimes, though, with these laptops, even when people say, I won't tear apart a laptop, the Dell Inspirons that I keep getting in, you have to take them all the way out, including the motherboard, to get to the hard drive. So if you're not taking apart a laptop, I don't know how in the world you're going to start to replace a drive, down the road. So hopefully most of the manufacturers won't do that, because it is a big pain to have to pull those things apart just to get to the, the hard drive, especially if you have a bad hard drive, which I did in another machine I had. So I think it's a skill that you got to know. Now, when you get down into phones and tablets and stuff like that, I won't even touch them, even though I probably should. But I, at this point, they're just too small for me. So
it's the wave that's coming on. I mean, that's what I do. I know that people listening aren't going to see this, but when you're talking about you hadn't had a processor go bad, I don't know how well this will show up.
Oh,
yeah, see that?
Yeah.
That was actually, it had thermal paste and everything. This AMD processor looks like somebody set a cigarette or something right across it. I mean, it right. burned. And so, yep, that's, and that was I think it's a Gateway all-in-one unit.
Okay, well, and those tend to run hot anyways because they're basically a, you know, a compressed laptop behind a, you know, hot screen. And it's like, yeah, I can imagine the heat buildup on that. I've never, you know, the processor I took out, it doesn't look like there's anything physically wrong with it. It was a Intel Core i5, and for whatever reason, it was just bad, and I couldn't tell you why it was bad, but it was. So what? Okay. So what other things have you been doing lately in your shop? As far as, are you doing a lot of virus removals? Are you doing a lot of hardware changing? You know, hardware repairs, stuff like that.
Yes.
Yes to all of the above.
Yeah. In my shop, I've kind of the way things work at New to UPC works out. Kind of interesting. I handle most of the hardware. Well, actually, I have a part-time guy that I call when I have hardware work. So, you know, if he's able to come in, then, you know, he does those. I have my tech that does all my software. I'm a TV guy. I have my game console guy. I have the guy that does the iPads. That leaves me with doing the phones and the other tablets.
Okay.
And everything else that goes along with answering the phones and all the ordering processes. And
okay.
That's just, but so that makes it nice. Let's see, right now I've got, I think, 4 laptop screens to replace, the processor to replace, and that all-in-one. I guess you would call this one a laptop sale, but she has a laptop and it's just busted up and it's going to cost more than what she wants to spend to repair it.
Right.
And so basically pulled her hard drive, stuck it into a used laptop and getting that one up and going, which that was a trying expedition there. Went through 3 laptops I had sitting around. To get one that finally actually said, well, and actually it walked in my door today because she called me up this morning and says, so am I going to be able to pick up my laptop today? I said, no. Tomorrow? No. What happened? It's bad. It went bad. The graphics chip went out.
Okay.
And then another one, it just wouldn't kick on. And so I was sitting there going, yeah, I don't know if we're going to be able to find another one in your budget that you have. And, you know, she said, well, keep me posted. Let me know what's going on. I said, okay. About 2 hours later, guy walks in. Yeah, I'd like to sell my laptop. Sold.
There you go.
Yes. Excellent timing. Because then she calls me up and goes, well, I guess I'll just go ahead and come on up there and pick up my laptop. I said, well, actually about that, I should have it ready for you tomorrow. She goes, oh, you got one? I said, yeah. She goes, wow, thanks.
Very so, cool.
Yeah. But I mean, so I do a lot of, you know, phone repairs is basically, you know, the phone repairs is what keeps me busy besides constantly working on developing, you know, scripts and things like that to help automate as much of the repair process as I can.
Okay. Now, what type of phones do you do?
Yes, I do them all.
Do you really? Okay,
and I do.
And now, do you find that lucrative enough? Because I know that the complaint for a lot of people was a lot of the non iPhones are basically the cost for the parts is so expensive that it's really hard to make any money doing them. Now, how have you been able to get around that?
Well, it's simple. I just tell them flat out, part costs this much. I charge only, for the most part, my screen installation fee is only $45.
Okay.
I mark up my part, you know, Some parts get marked up quite a bit, and other parts, you know, when you're looking at, say, a Galaxy S4 or S5, when the screen costs, you know, $200, $300, you know, it's like, well, I'll mark it up a little bit, but I don't get the markup on those like I do on iPhone screens, per se.
Okay.
But the interesting thing is like, with the iPhones, in all honesty, the iPhone 4s and 4s's, I really don't even want to touch anymore. It's almost not worth it to me.
Okay.
Because those take so much time to do compared to the 5, 5C, 5S. Those ones are, you know, walk in the park, you know, boom, 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 and you're done. But yet the market keeps pushing the price of the 4s down lower and lower. And I mean, I keep my price, it's set at where it's at now. And if they don't want to pay it, they wouldn't be happy to go somewhere else, because I'm not going any lower than what I charge now, because it's just, at that point, it's not worth it to me.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, do people spend, you know, $250, $300 to have a screen replaced on like a Samsung?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if their phone is, say, 3, 4, 5 months old,
right,
they don't have any other upgrades, then, and they just use their upgrade to get that phone, they're either going to be stuck with that, try to find one off of Craigslist or eBay, or buy a new one, you know, cash out from their carrier.
Right, right. Very interesting. That's good to know.
It just depends upon their situation, because the very first thing, with like somebody calls me with a Galaxy S4 or S5, my very first question to them, do you have insurance? No. Okay, well, are you sitting down? They're like, it's that bad? Mm-hmm. You know, the there's nothing I can do. The S4s and the S5s, the Super AMOLED LCD panels, LED panels, they're expensive. They're not cheap. I mean, you're looking, if you're lucky, you can catch one on sale for under $150, but they range $150 to $200 just for the part alone.
Okay.
Now, so when you tack that on with a little bit of markup for yourself and then installation, you know, it pushes that to, you know, if it's not on sale, $250 to $300.
Right, right. Now, would you say that the Samsung phones are just as easy to do as a iPhone, like an iPhone 5?
No.
Okay.
No. And, I think, honestly, if I've done, you know, 100, 200 of the Galaxy S5s, then it might be. But I haven't. Actually, I haven't even touched an – I haven't done a screen repair on an S5. I've done S4, I believe. I had an S5 in for something. I think it was just they didn't know how to operate their phone.
Okay.
But when you've done, you know, 100, 200 of the iPhone 5s, you know, you can basically do those blindfolded. I mean, there's two screws on the bottom, 4, 6, 7, 8. There's like 8, 9 screws that you do, and that's done. And that's if you're doing the entire, that's if you're doing the entire swap out and having to move the camera over and everything like that. The parts that I get now, well, I take it back. I don't get them. I bought a set of them. They come with the camera, the home button, everything already done for you. And then you just take the screws out, pull the old one off, pull the old screen off, put the new one in there, screw it back down, close it back up, and you're done in 5-10 minutes.
Nice. Okay. Very good. Yeah, that's good to know. So the Samsungs and stuff like that are definitely more difficult to do. Part of the problem is they're all made a little bit differently. And I think, your complaint about the iPhone 4 is you basically have to take the whole phone apart to get to the screen versus the 5. And I guess the 6 is going to be the same way. Basically, you can take the screen off from the front. You know, like you said, you know, pop the screws, boom, pull the screen off, replace it, done. And so I think that's why a lot of people do those. But I don't hear a whole lot of people doing screen replacements on, you know, other phones. I mean, do you do like LGs and stuff like that? Or okay.
Yep, I own an LG G2. I've replaced the screen on 2 LG G2s. And on that phone, on the G2, there is somewhere between an eighth and a 16th of an inch of space between the actual LCD and the glass and where that sits down on in the frame of the phone.
Okay.
And, you know, you're not getting adhesive tape in there. It doesn't really hold. The first one I did, it held. The second one I did, it didn't hold. It did not hold. I had to start exploring other options as far as for a to hold it to glue it down basically without using super glue.
Right. I've heard even people with iPhones on, or not iPhones, but the iPod touches and stuff like that. I've heard people taking them. They do one of two things. They either put them in a case, which kind of holds the screen in, or they super glue them down. And I'm like, talk about, man, I hope nothing ever happens to that thing again, because after that, it's pretty much toast.
Yeah, it's a one-shot wonder there.
Exactly. So,
but in all honesty, I will not, personally, I will not do the iPod touches. I guess if I have to go back to doing the iPads, I would now. But as far as the iPod touches, there's no way. I don't like them. I've fought with them too many times. I just have no desire to personally do them myself. My tech that does them, he doesn't even like doing them. And he said, in all honesty, the iPod Touch 5th generation is one of the hardest ones to do.
Oh, I can believe that, because I did, and I can't remember if mine was a fourth, might have been a fourth generation. But I remember pulling the thing apart and I had to replace the whole frame and the whole glass, and I ripped the volume cable off. And I tried putting it back together, and I got it back together. The problem was there was one little piece that was cast aluminum, and it busted where the power switch was. And there's no replacement part for that. And I didn't have a bunch in the shop where I could just pilfer from, you know, another one. So you're kind of stuck. You can't glue them. You can't epoxy them. There's nothing to hold back on that, you know, on that button. So at that point, I'm like, you know, hey, there's nothing I can do with this. It's pretty much toast. So, and that's what kind of turned me off to doing phones and stuff like that. But I'm hearing a lot of people say, no, a lot of these phones are pretty simple. And that's the other reason I didn't touch tablets, is because, you know, the tablets with the glued on screens, I just didn't want to mess with that stuff. But now some people are saying, you know, especially with the iPads, that they're fairly simple to do. They do take a little bit more time than a phone, because a phone's got screws in it where the iPads and stuff don't. Now, what types of tablets and stuff do you do at your shop?
Every one of them.
Okay.
The least favorite ones are, honestly, Asus and the Asus Transformers and the Kindle Fires. The reason being is parts. The Kindles, they like using just whatever they have sitting around, I guess. There's like three or four different parts. It's the same thing with the Asus. And you run into that a lot with the tablets, is that they can use three different charging port setups in it. One could be, you know, they all could be the same micro USB, but one will say, be on a daughter board that you can just swap that out. Other one, you know, two other ones are soldered to the board. One's reversed from the other one.
Okay. And
so, yeah, so I get people call and say, my Kindle Fire charging port's not working. Can you replace that? Well, possibly. It depends if I can get the part or not. I have to take it apart and see.
Okay. Now, do you find now with the parts and stuff like that, do you find that obviously you find it lucrative enough to do it? But are the parts expensive for those types of things?
They vary so greatly on tablets. There's not what I wish I could take and tell people, you know, here's one set price, all tablet charging port replacements are $55 or something like that.
Right.
But, you know, it's not like laptops. I can cover everything on a laptop PC jack for $99.
Right.
You know, and still make money. Whereas, you know, some of those, like phone charging ports, the Galaxy S3s, I replaced the charging port once, won't touch it again. I now sell the Qi wireless charging adapter and a charging port or a charging plate. So you just set the phone on there and now it wirelessly charges.
Okay, right.
It's a better solution. It's cheaper and saves me headache and hair.
Right, right. That makes sense. Now, how did you, when you first started doing phones and tablets, how did you figure out, did you just say, hey, I'm going to try this and see if I can do it or not? Or did you go, were there certain things that you had tried before where you go, I don't want to mess with this or, you know, I'll mess with that?
Well, the very first thing that I ever had in, as far as any of those types of devices goes, was a iPod Touch third generation. And watched a YouTube video and saw how to open it. And then I put it in a box and shipped it off to be repaired.
Said, I'm not messing with that. Okay. So, I mean, I guess a lot of times as technicians, when we look for things and, you know, I've done the same thing. You know, if somebody calls me about a tablet or a phone and I might go watch a YouTube video or go to ifixit.com or something along those lines to see if I can find something on how to do it and whether or not I want to attempt it. And I'll be honest with you, 9 times out of 10, I go, nah, it's not worth my time. When I can tear apart literally any laptop in less than 10 minutes and put it back together in the same amount of time. It just doesn't make sense for me to take hours to try to pull something apart, you know, the first or second or third time. I don't know. I guess it all depends. If you're getting a lot in, I guess it could be lucrative over time. I'm just kind of, I'm stuck with not doing that type of stuff, but I do get calls on them all the time. People say, yeah, hey, I need this phone replacement or this screen replacement on this phone, or do you do tablets and all this kind of stuff? So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, once you've done 4 or 5 different kinds, then it would be, you're more inclined to say, yeah, I can do that. Or,
okay.
I'll watch, you know, whenever I get a call for something new, I think I've done one Nokia, period, but Nokia Windows phone.
Okay.
I've had calls for 5, I think, total. So I don't know if it's just that those people don't break their phones or what the case is. But whenever I get a phone call for a phone that I've never done before, first thing I do is I, A, look up the part, and B, look up, I see what parts are available for it.
Okay. Because
sometimes on some of them you'll get glass-only parts available. And other ones you get, you know, the whole top assembly. Then it's a matter of watching the video to see, you know, watch somebody repair it. I lost my butt on doing a HTC M8.
Okay.
If you look on iFixit, they have it rated as a 10 in, on a scale of 0 to 10 in difficulty. I watched 5 YouTube videos on how to do this phone, and I said, okay, well, no problem. Okay, I'll do it. And all 5 of those videos did the exact same thing. And when I did it, I did what they showed. And then when I go to reassemble it, this part doesn't go back on.
Okay.
Had I watched video number 6, I'd have seen, oh, don't worry about doing that. So I went from now, then ended up breaking that screen. Well, put a little crack in it.
Okay.
So now I get a new screen. So now I've got about a $5 profit margin. And then they end up having some other little issue. The speaker. Whoa, hey, back up, guys. Thank you. I think it was a speaker, not the earpiece speaker. The loudspeaker, I think, was a little staticky. And after getting this new screen assembly put back together, I was like, they brought it in, and I was like, you know what? I don't feel comfortable taking this phone back apart because there's just not much there to this phone. I said, you know, send it off to HTC. Let them fix the speaker in it. HTC gets it, sends it back to them, says, well, somebody, you've had the screen replaced in here before, so we're not gonna fix it. And sent the phone back to them broken. It wouldn't charge, it wouldn't turn on. You could see where they had dismantled it. They didn't put it back together.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and now I have to refund them their money for the screen replacement.
Ugh.
Because I was the one that caused the problem.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, you brought up a good point, though. If you go to iFixit.com or similar places like that, they do rate the difficulty of taking the things apart. And I think if you go and watch some videos on certain devices that you want to fix, you can figure out for yourself, hey, is that something I can do? Is that something that I want to do? And you know what? You're probably going to eat it on the first couple jobs. And, you know, and I guess probably, because I'm even speaking to myself, I think one of the things I probably would do is if I plan on doing something like that is I'll probably go and say, you know what? I'll order a couple screens for this device. That way, if I mess one up, at least I've got a backup. You know, and hopefully I can figure out how to do it. Because, I mean, I did the same thing with laptops, you know, back in the day. It's just that as the device gets smaller, it's one of those things where I go, man, I just don't know if it's worth it. But I'm hearing from a lot of people that they're making, you know, pretty good money on this stuff. So something I'm definitely going to look into.
You know, and then the other thing is that after you've done several of the phones, you know, especially the iPhones, and you don't throw out the screens, just keep them sitting in a box. Stockpile them in a box because there's recyclers that'll buy this from you.
Oh, okay. That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I first started doing them, something just told me, hey, put these iPhone 4 screens in a box. You know, because I do e-waste recycling. So I'm like, well, I just set them aside, you know. I'll figure out something to do with them. I don't know what. And I think I had about a year's worth of them stocked up, and I get a phone call one day. Hey, we see that you do iPhone repairs. What do you do with your screens? I said, I have them sitting in a box. I'm like, well, we'll buy them from you.
Nice.
And, yeah, so I was like, okay, well, how much are you paying? What is that? $150 a screen. I was like, oh, okay, well, hey, not bad. I got like 50 of them here.
Yeah.
Like $75. Cool. Okay. Well, then I started getting phone calls. It was literally going for at one point in time, I had a phone call almost every day from a different recycler calling me. It is just getting really annoying. But the thing is that from that first time of $150 a screen, I've ended up with like up to $7 a screen.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, when my last recycling, it was down to, because the price markets dropped on them, but it was about $5 at $5.50 a screen that I got paid for the recycling of the 4s or 4s's. I think the 5s were $10-$15 a piece.
Wow. So there must be something in there that's precious metals and stuff like that where these guys take the thing apart or something.
The LCD panel. The genuine LCD panels where the money's at.
Really?
Because, yep, what they do is they have a machine that separates the glass and digitizer from the LCD panel, and then they put on a $2 piece of glass, you know, a dollar, $2 piece of glass to it, and now they have a high quality screen that they can sell, as opposed to, you know, a complete total generic knockoff.
Okay. Very good. Okay. That makes sense.
Yep. There's lots of things to watch when you start doing the repairs. You know, I know a lot of people that I've been in, like, the Tech Noble forums, and, you know, seen where, you know, guys, they don't have a parts distributor. They just go to eBay and buy them whenever they need them.
Right.
eBay is my last resort for parts. I use Group Vertical almost exclusively for my parts. I know they have grown so much since I first was on Podnuts. My first episode that I was on Podnuts, I was buying DC jacks for them. And they had laptop fans and hinges, but that was, you know, USB ports and DC jacks. That was all that they carried. And I told them, I said, hey, you know, hey, these, you know, you guys need to start doing these, carrying the iPhone screens. This stuff's, you know, going to be taken off. And it's like, John was like, well, you know, we'll talk about it. And I'll let you know. A couple weeks later, he's like, hey, I'm going to be, we're getting a test order in, and I'm going to send you a couple screens, see how that works out. And that's been 3 to 4 years ago now. And God, they've gone from carrying a few iPhone screens to having all of the iPhone screens, all the various different iPhone parts, Samsung, HTC, Motorola, iPads, you know, you name it. They carry a very large line of parts. And so I am responsible for them, you know, increasing their bottom line probably, you know, six figures.
Wow. Now, what's the name of that company again?
Group Vertical.
Group Vertical. Okay. And is it .com?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And they're based out of Michigan. So
really?
Grand Rapids. Yep.
Well, that's so, just a couple hours for me.
Yep. Parts arrive typically in 2 days.
GroupVertical.com. Okay. I'm going to put that in the show notes.
But I take, and like I said, most of my screen installations are $45 for labor. But on those ones when basically when heat is going to be involved and I have to apply heat and start separating glass from LCD panels, the installation merits another $20 for me, because those are typically a lot harder jobs. Now, some of them, you know, the LG G2, honestly, it's not that hard of a repair once you get the glass apart. I have my own little trade secret that I have for removing the glass from those. And it's kind of funny because I'll watch a YouTube video and guy will be sitting there with a blow dryer or a heat gun heating it up and starting to separate it. And I do my little utility that I use. And while he's sitting there still with the heat gun, I'm sitting there, okay, I've got the glass apart. Okay, let's fast forward, skip around this YouTube video, wait till he gets that glass taken off. And, oh, okay, there we go. And continue it from there. You know, I watch and I, you know, the key thing to, if you're watching YouTube videos, one, don't ever just watch one video.
Right.
And, you know, pay attention to where connectors are. Because it's really easy to oh yeah, you just, you know, run your sesame tool or whatever, or a razor knife, you know, run that around the edge. Oh, but over here in the bottom left hand corner, that's where the connector is for the capacitive touch buttons. Oops, wish I'd have watched that about 30 seconds ago. Yeah, so yeah, it's one of those things, you know, always watch the videos. It's kind of one of those things, you know, I know most of us are throw the instruction manuals away when it comes to doing anything. But when it comes to doing the phones, if it's the first time you're doing it, you either A, better watch the video first watch two or three videos first before attempting it. Or if you're not going to do that, then if there's no videos available, which I've run into that before, then take your sweet time. Go right. slow. Just, you know, inch by inch and pay attention and look, pay attention. You know, and once you've done, you know, several different phones, you're able to pretty much tell what you're going to run into once you start taking it apart. And once you get the back of it off and you look down, you say, okay, well, I've got this cable, flex cable here, these two over here. So I know when I go to take this apart, you know, there's going to be some kind of connections here, there, and there. And you look around like, okay, there's no other ribbon cables going anywhere. So there's no other connections. I don't have to worry about anything. One of the G2s that I did, I dropped the camera, the front facing camera. I dropped the camera on the carpet. I couldn't find it.
Oh my gosh. They're that small?
The whole thing, the camera itself is about, the little box for it.
Wow.
Maybe that big.
Okay.
And then it has the little connector cable that comes off of it. I mean, it's only about like that big. I spent a day and a half looking for it. I sprained my wrist on the ground. I'm moving around and ended up spraining my left wrist on it, looking for it. And I ended up ordering another camera and for it. Luckily, I was able to find one. And got that phone done. And I think it was 2 weeks later. Boom. It just all of a sudden found it.
Step on it?
No, but it was under my desk. But even, I mean, it's kind of funny because three of us looked for it. My desk got completely cleared off, top, bottom, underneath, everything. And yeah, I did. I almost stepped on it is what happened. As I went to step down, I was like, what is that?
Wow.
I picked it up. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Where were you 2 weeks ago? You know, I swear, like the screws, it's funny because like the iPhone 4 and 4S, those ones are fun when people come in with like the, you know, and they need the back replaced. I do those on site because they take, you know, I have them fill out a check-in slip. While they're filling it out, I have the back glass changed and it's done. And before they're even done filling out the papers. And they're like, wow, those are really tiny screws. I tell them flat out, I said, those are the biggest screws inside the entire phone. The ones that will actually hold it together.
Right.
And they're like, and it rings true with the 5 series as well. The screws that actually hold the phone together are the biggest screws in there. And it's really easy to drop those screws and not be able to find them.
Now, right.
Luckily, I've got a little tray full of extra screws for when I do drop them. I now have a rule that I will spend 1 minute looking for the screw. If I don't find it in 60 seconds, I move on.
Right.
I'll just reach and grab another screw and then put magnets down later and scrape the carpet.
Sure.
Find it that way and then pump those into the little tray of parts.
Yeah, one of the things I ended up buying one of those things, one of those magnetic mats from iFixit. And I actually like that because even when I drop a screw, 9 times out of 10, it lands, you know, because I'm going towards that towards that mat anyways, and ends up landing on there and grabbing it before, you know, pops off and bounces and goes on the carpet. So that's helped me for some of the small screws and stuff that I do.
Yeah, my bad habit is usually when I'm working, I usually work on them at my desk. So I have my monitors to the back, my keyboard, my mouse, and then I have the keyboard pushed forward, and I have my work area right there for doing the phones. And I have my method of doing them. And then whatever reason, I'll get a phone call or whatever, and I'll reach and grab the mouse and move it. And then when I come back, it never fails. My wrist will catch
one,
1, 2, 10 of those screws, and I just go, Oh, man. I need to have like an anti-gravity area right below the edge of my desk.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I think I'm going to invest in a roll of magnetic to lay down underneath my, you know, my desk area.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
As opposed to having like the plastic rolling chair mats.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm use magnetic. That way they'll just land there and they won't go off too far.
Right. No, that's great. That's a great tip.
Yeah, stereo sound again. Yeah. Nope, it went away.
Oh, no, that's good. Yeah, I'm going to definitely check out this Group Vertical website. Looks like they've got a lot of the parts that you would need for fixing the types of things we're talking about. And yeah, I can't believe it's right here in my state. So that's awesome. That's a great tip. I thank you for that. So as far as computers and stuff, we've talked about some of your mobile devices and it sounds like you're doing a lot. As far as computers and stuff, what are you mostly doing nowadays?
Oh man, it's a gamut. I mean, virus removals. It's funny because I see that a lot of people, I haven't seen a virus. You know, I haven't had a virus removal come in, you know, a couple months. I hit them in. You know, if one doesn't come in a day, like I did not have a virus removal come in today. So tomorrow I'll probably have three of them come in.
Okay.
So virus removals is probably always has been number one.
Okay.
My repairs always come in waves. I have, I think, four or five broken screens to replace this week. You know that I've got parts either in or on their way in.
Okay.
To replace those, so it's kind of funny with those because it'll go, you know, I'll go weeks without a broken screen, and the next thing you know, here comes three, four, five of them.
Right. Yeah.
Same thing with hard drives. You know, there's hard drives. Just people don't understand how. How's my hard drive bad? I've had it replaced already, or you know, it's only 6 months old. So, well, I've had them come in 3 months old, 2 months old, brand new laptop, and you know, it's electronics. I tell people flat out, there's no guarantees when it comes with them. I mean, yeah, they'll warranty the product, but there's no guarantee that it'll last as long as the warranty or anything longer.
Right.
You know, especially nowadays, everything's made for a disposable. Hey.
One of my rules of thumb is always, I always tell people, I said, you know, if you can get past the first 2 years on a hard drive, I said, you'll probably have it for 20. It'll be fine. But within that first 2 years, that's usually when they break, you know, something goes wrong with them. So yeah, it's just one of those things. And maybe that's why these companies have, you know, they'll offer the 2 year warranty on a lot of these hard drives, you know, your Western Digitals and Seagates and stuff like that. Because they know.
Depending upon which Western Digital you buy, you get 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Actually, the Western Digital, I just bought a Western Digital Black for a laptop, which is another thing that I do. If I don't ever replace a 5400 RPM laptop hard drive with another 5400 RPM, I take it up to a 7200 RPM, usually Western Digital Black. You know, the customer's going to pay a little bit more, but to me, you're going to get better performance out of it, and they're made just a little bit better. So there's a better chance that it's going to last you longer. Yeah. So,
yeah. One of my absolute stickler rules is when it comes to placing a hard drive, is never, ever use a used hard drive unless they absolutely have to have an IDE hard drive. And then, you know, especially IDE laptop drives, good luck finding a new one anywhere.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know if I'd work on anything like that because it would have to be running Windows XP. I know it can't run anything better than that. So at that point, it's kind of like, nah, I'm not your guy. You need to go somewhere else.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. I guess I'm a glutton for punishment because I take on, you know, all these things. I last week had a G3 tower come in and, you know, that's running Mac OS X 10.3.9 and was still with the you know, the RISC processor. There's, you know, the luckily the problem actually just kind of solved itself.
Okay.
Well, he was having a keychain password issue, and he's like, he came in and it's like, well, let me try this password here, and the same password he had been trying, and it just worked all of a sudden.
Okay.
So, but you know, I get these ones, you know. I think there's an invisible sign that I don't see that everybody else does see outside of my business that says, if everyone else has said it can't be fixed, bring it in here.
Chuck will do it.
Yeah. Last week I had a guy bring me a bag with a laptop in it that's been sitting in his closet for the last 2 years after he took it apart. He had the DC jack replaced in it once, and then his dog broke it again. And so he decided to try taking it apart because the coworker was no longer there that replaced it for him last time. So he said he changed out the jack. He got that changed out, no problem. Super glued it in.
Okay.
And then he couldn't figure out how to put the rest of the laptop back together. I said, oh, great. Okay. He says, there's no rush on it. He says, been sitting in my closet for 2 years. Just whenever you get to it. So it's sitting on the floor in the bag still up at the front desk waiting for when I have free time. This winter's coming, and I'm sure that I'll have some days where we don't have any work coming in because of the weather. So that'll be project time for that.
Gotcha. But, okay.
No. Yeah, I guess I'm a glutton for punishment. I used to get one a month that, you know, was just a real beat your head on the desk, and now it's about at least one a week for yeah. those repairs.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of weird things that go on. I actually had some trouble replacing I replaced a hard drive in one of those Dell Inspirons, and I had a hard time getting Windows. I've never had this error before, but it was a CD DVD error, and it said it basically didn't have the driver on the disk. So there's a couple workarounds. One of which I didn't like. And that was basically I put it on a USB stick and I put it in one USB port. And then when it asked me that question, it came up and said CD DVD driver missing. Because the ISO I was using was a good ISO. I've used it on other machines. It's just on this particular Dell, it wouldn't work. So I hit cancel. I moved the USB drive to the other USB port on the other side of the laptop, and it let me install Windows. So, you know, the other way that I was able to get it to work, because I was curious, why is this going on? What I did was I downloaded a CD DVD driver. In particular, basically one that you would have put on a floppy years ago, very small file. I put that on your USB stick, and basically I could put that in there. And when it asked for that CD DVD driver, I hit browse, went to the file on my USB stick. It found the driver, it loaded it, and then it would let me load Windows. So two different fixes for the same problem. I was just curious because I've never, ever seen anything like that before. I'm like, this is odd. You know, because usually all those drivers are on the disk. And even though the Windows, you know, 7 ISO I'm probably using is fairly old, it really shouldn't matter. They're generic drivers for most of your CD DVDs. Nothing really changes on any of them, no matter how new they get. So,
yep, I ran into that only once. And yeah, I cycled through probably 8 different installation disks trying to get it to work. I think at that point in time, I think I ended up just creating a USB install and installing it via USB just because I was like, I'm tired of screwing around with it.
Right. Yeah. And I did the same thing and I still got the same error. So I was like going, I had to figure out what I needed to do. You know, that's the crazy part about it. But so what types of, What's some of your favorite tools, you know, maybe hardware, software you're using today that you basically say, man, I could not live without these things. These are the life to my business.
PC Repair Tracker. I mean, I say, yeah, every time I'm asked that
question,
I always
get
that answer.
Yep.
But it keeps me on, it keeps everything right there. I mean, Luke does a great job with it. He handles our requests. You know, I've got probably a standing list of like 50 requests that I want added to it or modifications done. It's what keeps me running on day-to-day basis. And if it wasn't for that, I might have quit. I think I honestly might have quit just trying to keep up. You know, when you have, you know, in a week's time, when you have 30 or 40 systems that come in and you're trying to figure them all out. And QuickBooks was a horrible, horrible solution because it didn't do anything for, you know, keeping track of the repairs. Yes, it keeps track of the customer details and what things cost, but it didn't keep track of where you're at and, you know, everything on that system. And PC Repair Tracker does that. I mean, I get a customer that calls and I simply, you know, they give me their name or their phone number or their work order number, and I can pull it up. I see where I'm at with it. I can see their work, their order history. I try putting in as much of the details about their system as possible. So that way, the key thing I always try to do is get serial numbers, service tags, whatever. So that way, if nothing else, I can go to the manufacturer and, you know, find out what parts they're, you know, they call you up needing. You know, because nothing worse than someone calling up saying, yeah, I have a Dell Inspiron. Let's pick a good one here. One of their,
L5110 is one of the ones I keep getting in the shop all the time right now.
Well, like the Inspiron, 1540, or I think it was, or something like that.
Okay.
They made them back from Vista.
Right, right.
All the way through. So, you know, you get a customer that calls you up and, you know, they want to upgrade the memory in it. Well, is it DDR, DDR2, DDR3?
Right.
You know, because they made it for that series for so long that you don't know. I mean, you could sit there and say, oh, yeah, you know, no problem. You know, you want to upgrade that to 4 gig? No problem. We can get you, you know, two gig sticks to go replace that one, you know, those 2 512s you got in there, and it'll be, you know, $60. And then when they bring it in and you go, oh, crap, this is DDR. And, you know, to get a 2 gig stick of that, it's going to be $80 a piece on them.
Right.
You know, that's a big game changer. And at least with having PC Repair Tracker there, you know, it keeps those little details like that. So that way you're able to look it up and give your customers a better, you know, you sound like you really know more about them. And they just think, wow, he knows exactly what my computer is. And, you know, like you're psychic or something. That's been one of my best tools ever.
Now with PC Repair Tracker, is that something that the customer puts in via your website, or is that something that you put in when they bring their machines in?
There is a service request module to it. The customer can input their, you know, basically make a service request. They put in, you know, their customer information and, you know, what type of device you have, Dell laptop, da da da. But it doesn't ask for the serial numbers or anything like that.
Gotcha.
So the rest of that's all done when you check the customer in, and all the rest of the information. And if you use D7, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when you run, it'll actually gather the system details and populate the information, the specs for that system in PC Repair Tracker.
Oh, okay.
Not 100% of the time, but it does do it sometimes. And, you know, everything from like the Windows product key to the serial number of the machine if it's available.
Okay. No, that's a good tip. Yeah, because a lot of that information, I was one of those techs that was never taking down serial numbers until somebody explained to me one time. They said, well, if somebody brings a machine back in, they could have two identical models, and you know, they say, hey, this wasn't taken care of, you could end up doing two virus removals for the price of one. I'm like, well, okay. The rare times that that might happen, you might be right. But then I started thinking, it's probably good to have that information, because anytime you're ordering parts or trying to find things for a laptop or desktop or whatever, having those numbers and figuring out exactly what it is and having to match it up so that you can replace the same exact part is sometimes key, because at least you know you're on the right track, where you could order a part that's for, let's say, an N5110, and it might be for the, you know, the 40 different models that they had, and that part might not fit in there. So at least if you have numbers on your stuff, you're going to have a better opportunity to, you know, find what you need.
Very true. And then also, I've had this happen once or twice, where a customer called me up and said, hey, by chance, do you have the serial number to my laptop? Like, and I pull up and say, actually, I do. Like, well, can I get that? Because our house got broken into.
Oh, yes.
And our laptop was stolen. And, you know, nobody keeps track of that information. And so, you know, please don't, you know, they're not going to ever track it down without a serial number.
Right, right. Good point.
So, you know, it's one of those nice features to have. When you're talking about repairs, well, actually, it's not really been a repair that we've been doing a lot lately. We had, this summer we had some storms come through, and a lot of people had various storm damage. So we did a lot of insurance quotes, you know, for people. They bring in TVs, game systems, laptops, routers, you know. They just basically needed, put it on paper as to, you know, if it's, you know, if it can be repaired, how much.
Right.
And, that's actually pretty easy money there.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It'll be this much, you know, and then they're going to pay you for that quote. And that's a great way of looking at it, and a great way of making money, I think.
One of the tools that I, has been invaluable, just this past weekend, a friend of mine called me up and said her son's laptop, it gets online, has internet, but it can't go to any websites. And, actually it was her dad that called me up, because he's an IT guy. And he said, short of reformatting this laptop, which would probably drive the teenager to suicide, he's tried everything and hasn't been able to get it going. And so he was using LogMeIn. He had that installed on there. So I logged in through LogMeIn, and I don't like LogMeIn. I can't transfer files via LogMeIn, or at least the version he used or whatever. I'm not very familiar with LogMeIn.
Okay.
I prefer TeamViewer. It works very well for me. And so I get into there, and yeah, sure enough, I can't browse at all. So some of the tools that you need to have in your repertoire are, you know, learning the command line. I was able to – well, the first thing I tried doing was I FTP'd to my web server to download D7, to download TeamViewer. Well, once it downloaded those, it kept giving me invalid files that they weren't 32 or 64-bit version or whatever the case was. Knowing damn well that they are.
Right, right.
But what I found worked was actually creating a Visual Basic script to download it through HTTP. And those files downloaded just fine and installed just fine. So, you know, the best thing I can tell you to do is Google it, how to download a file through a Visual Basic script. And keep that as a template on hand. So that way, if you are in this situation, you can just sit there and change the web address to the name of the file, to the web address that you needed to go to download the file, and type it up on their computer, you know, copy and paste it or whatever you need to do right there. Run that script, downloads the file. I downloaded D7. I had it repair internet permissions, repair permissions, reset networking, and it was back up and running. Took me probably 35, 45 minutes to be able to get to that point. Once I had D7 running, I kid you not, I think it was maybe 10 minutes done.
Nice.
It was back online.
Okay.
And I had SFC scanner running in the background. I said, all right, you know, because we even created a new account, user profile, and it still didn't take care of the problem. So I said, well, once that scan's done, delete the new user profile, you're all set. But so scripting, you know, it as far as what everything did in that script, I don't know. But
it worked.
But it worked. And that's all that you need to worry about. As long as, you know, as long as you can look at it and see that it's not going to download something else, you know, it's pretty cut and dry. And, you know, as long as you're going to a reputable source to get your code snippets from, you can make them do anything that you need them to do. So that's, you know, building yourself a little repertoire. That's how D7 came about. That's how Nick Shaw, you know, created D7 was he started writing these, you know, bash scripts and Visual Basic scripts and started tweaking them and building them onto them. And that's where D7 came from. So those little things like that, you know, it's invaluable to have. You know, it's a small skill set. It doesn't take much to work on it. But that's invaluable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I agree. Very, very good. I guess, yeah, we're at about an hour. Are there any business tips that you have, that you've already given some, but is there anything else that you'd want to say, business tip wise that would help somebody out there that's, you know, working in the computer repair field?
Customer service is number one.
Amen to that.
Keep your customer, you know, and we get busy, we get hectic, we forget, you know, you have a repair that, you know, you ordered a part for, or, you know, you get that customer that says, oh, here, this is, you know, there's no rush on this. Well, when they say that there's no rush on that, they mean that they're not expecting it done today, but they do expect it done within the month, you know, and, you know, some of those you'll push aside and forget about it. You know, and then a few days it turns into a week or two, and then that customer calls up, and if you don't have anything to, you know, any information to give them, then they don't like that. I mean, that looks bad
right.
upon you.
Right.
And if the repair is taking longer, you know, I order all my laptop screens. 99.9% of them all come from laptopscreens.com out of Canada. I've had a problem with two or three screens out of the several hundred that I've ordered. You know, usually they were, you know, the problems that I've ever had were DOA. Well, I had ran into one problem that I had never ran into with them before, and that was a single dead pixel, but it was bright and it was almost in the very middle of the screen, and it was a bright blue that it was shining through. And when their background and everything was dark, it was, you know, it wasn't acceptable. And so I had to send it back. And so tell the customer, when something like that happens, you got to inform the customer.
Right.
Look, we're expecting to have this laptop screen done for you by today. Here's what we ran into. We're swapping it out. And with doing things like that, until you've built up enough of a reputation with your parts suppliers, and even still yet after that point, some suppliers, they require you to send in the part, and then they will send you the replacement. In our business, once you've already waited, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 days for that part to come in, and you installed it and it was bad, then you send it back, there's another 3 days, then it takes them a day or two to evaluate it, and then they send you another one 3, 4, 5 days back. You've made this repair, which was supposed to take you 3 days to have completed, 3 to 4 days to have completed, into a 2-week job.
Right.
You know, so at some point in time, you have to have enough money to set aside, especially like a laptop screen. They're, for the most part, they're cheap. And they don't cost that much. You know, if your part supplier will not send you the replacement before receiving the defective merchandise back, then you need to order another one. with doing phone screens, you know, I ran into it. Those are, I swear, the fail rate in phone screens is a lot higher than it is in laptop screens or anything else ever. But, and when you're dealing with some of these screens where you're putting out $150, $200 for this part, and you get a bad one in, and phones, unlike laptops, are of higher importance to a person to have nowadays.
Right. It, true.
You know, they first couple questions that they ask you after, can you do this, is how long? I get people to drop off their phone and say, oh yeah, just text me when it's done. Oh, did you give me a, did you have another phone? Did you leave me? Oh yeah, you have my phone. Yeah. You know, they start panicking. I've had people literally go into panic attacks because they don't have their phone. They're going to be without their phone for the next, you know, hour, two, three, 4 hours. It's like, wow, you really got to get a grip on life, man. There's more than just your phone.
Right.
But, you know, when you run into that situation, you know, $200 is a lot to throw out on the screen, you know, but it's what's going to make that customer happy. So if you have, if you've already paid the $200, now you're having to pay another $200 out, that's $400 you've come out of pocket on. And most of the time I don't get money up front from customers on their phones. So I look at it this way. I'm either going to keep their phone or I'm going to get paid. Sure. One of the two.
Right.
So, you know, you have to be in touch with them, but you need to have that money set aside to, if you can't afford to, if you don't order two of that screen when you initially do put your order in, be prepared to have that money to order another one in case that defective part comes in. Because instead of your customer having to wait an extra week for that repair to get done, you can at least have it done in two more days or three more days. And on that note, Amazon Prime is the best thing that has ever happened. Because I tell you what, when you can pay $4 and have it there the next day, as opposed to having to pay $15 to have it there the next day, that's a very, 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 very nice thing.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Very cool. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us. If people want to reach you, what would be the best way to do that?
Probably info@newtoupc.com.
Okay.
info@newtoupc.com. Letter N, letter U, number two, letter U, letter P, letter C.com.
Very good. Well, thank you again for coming on the show and sharing with us a lot of good information. And you guys can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Halish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you guys want to leave a voicemail, call 1-888-697-0162. You guys can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.